Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And on this edition of Garden Talk, we turn our attention to gourds. And the gourd gal, Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, self-described, she's the gourd girl. I called her the gourd gal, but she's I think she goes by the gourd girl. It's great to have her back. She was with us on another occasion, and we had so much fun talking about gourds, we thought, why not? And have her back. And also Saturday, we have an event, the 5th Annual Gourd Festival called Gourdy Two Shoes at the Old Brick Botanical Gardens on Atwood Avenue in Madison from 9 to 4. We'll talk about that with her and certainly take your questions and comments about gourds. Do you work with gourds at all? Do you consider yourself a gourd girl or a gourd guy? I hope you'll join in. Do you grow them? What do you do with them? We'd love to hear from you. There are lots of things you can do with gourds, and as you are going to find out, maybe you don't know a thing about gourds. Well, you're going to learn a lot. I hope you stay with us here, and I hope you call in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We would love to hear from you. And Terry Schmidt, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be back, Larry.
Yeah, it's great
Thank
to have you.
You
back.
Thank you.
Now, there are people who are listening who will say, all right, I kind of know what a gourd is, but what is a gourd?
A gourd is sort of like a pumpkin. Pumpkins, yeah? Gourds, squash, they're all in the same family of cucumbers. It's a vegetable, but it's one vegetable that, like most vegetables, over time will rot. When a gourd is mature, it actually turns into almost a wood-like product. It's very mm-hmm. hard. They come in different sizes and shapes, different species, if you will. A hard-shell gourd, which is what most people know as a birdhouse gourd, is called a Lagenaria. And then there are ornamental gourds, the ones that people usually use during the holidays, the little orange and green and yellow mm-hmm. ones. Those are miniatures.
Centerpieces and so forth.
Yep, yep. And those are cucurbits. They're called cucurbita pepo. And then what most people don't know is that loofahs, which we use for mm-hmm. bathing and for scrubbing things, loofahs are also a gourd. Gourds are edible. They're used very lot in Asian and Indian food. When they're small, they're used that way. In fact, from time to time at the farmers markets, we've had East Indian people come up when we have snake gourds that we've dried, which might be 2 or 3 feet long, and they'll say, why do you waste them like this? Because if we pick them when they're short, they'll eat them. But so... Yeah, so that's gourds are used for a lot of things. They can be used for practical things like musical instruments, mm-hmm. Vases and adornments, and then just artworks of all kinds.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Yeah. And you talked about this the last time you were on, but it's a great story about how you got interested in gourds. And tell us that story again.
I tell this story every time I'm someplace that asks, how did I get into it? I had just moved here from California to go to graduate school, study music. And the first week I was here, a neighbor told me to go to the farmer's market. It was such a great thing. So I went to the farmer's market, and as I was walking around the square, the man who eventually became my husband, the gourd guy, was waving a gourd, and it was shaking, and my degree was in music composition, and I thought, oh, I could write music with this thing. And thinking, of course, that no one had ever done that, which like now I think that was kind of silly. But the following week, I went up to his stand and met him and bought a gourd, which he insists he gave me, but he did not. I paid for that gourd. and then a year and a half later, we were married. That's kind of the way it went. And he kept asking me, can't you draw on a gourd? Can't you draw? Because I did not do art. Mm-hmm. And I said no. And eventually one long winter day, and winters out here are so long, and when you're from mm-hmm. California, you just don't know what to do with them, I messed around on a gourd. And a little encouragement goes a long way with me. And he thought it was good. And that's where that went.
So you do instruments, artwork on painting on gourds?
Yep, I paint, I wood burn, I weave, I make musical instruments, I do carving, I do sculptures, I do abstracts, so you name it, I do it. And everything I do, I teach.
And it's cool because your background or your training in music, you're still able to have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Of course, most commonly, I would guess that gourds are used from a musical perspective as drums. Larger gourds are used as drums. But when you think of Indian music, sitars are probably the most common thing in Indian music that you think of it as the body is made out of a gourd. And I brought with me an instrument called a gopichan, which is an East Indian instrument.
Cool looking instrument.
Which you guys love. So I'll describe what this is. It's a small gourd body that's been cut open on both ends, and the bottom has a sheepskin head, and along the sides is connected to it a long piece of bamboo, which is pliable, and a string, like a violin or guitar string, is strung from the base of the where the skin is, all the way up through the top of the bamboo.
They're really pretty.
It's kind of neat, isn't it? It's called a gopichand, also called a gopiyantra. And so it's used sort of as an accompanying instrument in India. And I'll just kind of give you an idea. When I pluck the string, I will also squeeze the bamboo. And so it loosens and tightens the string. So it sounds like this.
That's very cool.
It's kind of neat. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting instrument. This one was made by a fellow here in town. His name is Scott Nickelbein, and he makes gourd banjos and all sorts of instruments with gourds.
Do that once more. I'll take a picture and we'll put it up on the Facebook page.
Sure.
All right.
Isn't that fun?
I'll try and upload that to the Facebook page here at some point when I got a minute.
Yeah. And then another thing I mentioned that Scott makes banjos. Something I wanted to mention today was that I just found out there's a guy from Ontario who makes great gourd banjos. And he's going to be teaching a five-day gourd banjo workshop at the university this summer from July 25th to the 29th. And I think the information will be coming out at the university very soon so people can sign up for that. But.
And you do so many workshops, and I want to talk about them. But Steve from Ives Grove, Wisconsin, is online with a question or comment. So let's go there. Steve, hello.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
My question revolves around some swan gourds.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And my wife picked up a small packet of seeds, and wouldn't you know, they actually made gourds. So I'm curious, are those seeds inside the gourds, are they a hybrid, or will I be able to save seeds from them?
Did you have other squash growing near them?
Probably not within about 60 yards or so.
Yeah, probably. The seeds are probably okay. Let me first just say that when one buys seeds, like you said your wife did, and then it actually created gourds, that's the idea, Steve. So don't be surprised when you end up with a lot of gourds from these plants.
Okay.
So the seeds will be viable for next year. I can't guarantee that they will be 100% swan gourds, because if they were pollinated with any other cucurbit, then it could affect the seed for next year. But the other thing is, if the gourd froze, then that reduces the viability of the seed.
Well, I waited till the vine froze, and then I snagged them into the garage, and I put them into my basement. And that kind of turns me to my second question, is when you clean the gourds, you know, they've got that nice modeling on there, you know, the black and the brown and all that. Do you use a bleach water solution with your green scrubby or just detergent?
Yeah, we usually soak the gourds for 24 hours.
Oh, really?
In water with bleach. And there's no, you know, certain amount of bleach. Just throw some bleach in there.
Because they're nice and firm.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they got a little bit of white mold, but I just kind of scrub some of that off dry.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually got to soak them, and then how far down do you take them, they say, to get the outer layer off?
Yeah, well, you'll know once you start doing it, because you don't want to take the actual outer layer of the gourd off. If you soak it for 24 hours, what's on the gourd should come off pretty readily if you use just like a scrubby thing.
Go ahead. ahead.
But you also want to be careful. You said that you sort of scrubbed off some of that white mold. You want to be careful doing that when it's dry, because that mold, if you breathe it in, can be kind of bad for you.
Okay.
So from a safety perspective, it's always good to do your cleaning either with a good mask on, or for sure, if you're scraping the outside of the gourd, you want to do it with the gourd wet so that all that mold doesn't just fly up into the air.
Okay, well, that means my wife was right on that one.
Yeah, you got to be careful with it. So, and then in terms of soaking it, we soak them for 24 hours because even if your gourd seems like it's nice and hard, that 24 hours is going to give the gourd, it's going to give you an opportunity to know if that gourd truly is. If there's going to be a soft spot on that gourd, it's going to show up in that time. And so usually when we clean ours, my husband cleans them, I don't, he soaks them and then he really, really squeezes all over the gourd to almost try to break it to see if there's a soft spot. Because if there is, there's no sense in going much farther.
Right. Yeah, I got a few that were kind of wrinkly and funky looking.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, that sounds good. Now, do you just put like an ounce of regular household bleach per gallon or not that much? Or
Yeah. It's not, if you're doing... If you have just a regular size bucket of water, you're just going to tip some bleach in. It's not, maybe a half a cup or something.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. There was like 8 seeds in a packet, and once you know, I got about 13 swan gourds.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Where are you located now?
Racine County.
Oh, Racine. Uh-huh. Okay, well, that's a nice growing spot.
Yeah, it turned out real well. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments about gourds. Do you work with them? Do you grow them? Do you have questions about what you can do with them? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And check out our Facebook page. Judith just uploaded a gorgeous picture that Chuck emailed us, a monkey gourd. And I'm going to get that up so you can take a look at it too, Terry. But It's a really, really beautiful gourd. And we have an email from Karen. While growing up, our family sold pumpkins, gourds, squash, and fall items. I was known as the gourd queen.
Uh-huh.
Because of my love affair with their shapes, colors, and variety, I was in charge of the picking and washing all the gourds for their sale. I still can spend hours in a gourd patch enjoying their beauty and personality, as there are no two gourds exactly alike.
Do you know that a lot of the gourd festivals around the country in the competition area, they have a growers competition and an artist competition, and they actually have in the growers competition to try to show two gourds that are almost identical. And so normally if you get to, they're going to be right next to each other on the plants. And, they do sometimes look almost like twins. They can get pretty close. But then when they're in the drying process, that modeling effect, the color and, the changes, it does change them. But shape-wise, sometimes you can find them almost identical.
Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society and self-described gourd girl. I would describe her that way, too. Here with us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Terry Schmidt talking with us about gourds today here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears-Poisson answering the phones today, doing her usual great job. And she did post a picture, and I said it was a monkey gourd, but that's not correct. Is when you go to the Larry Mueller show, you have to type in the Larry Mueller show to get to the Facebook page. You don't have to be a member of Facebook to look at it. But that is a snake gourd, as you were...
It's a snake gourd, and I'm guessing that the artist may have named it a monkey gourd by the artwork on it. It appears as though they have carved all the way through it, done some beautiful carving on that.
Yeah.
And, because I can see that the close-up photo is a monkey. Can you see that?
Sure.
That on the right? That's
yes.
A monkey. So that's why they call it that. But that would either be a Lagenaria snake gourd, or it could be a Trichocyanthes, which is not a Lagenaria, but it's called a long gourd.
But it's whatever it is, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's a real that's a really amazing work there. I wonder who did that.
I don't know. I'll find that out. Judith will give me the answer to that. I'm pretty sure of that. Vivian in Door County has a question or comment for you. A question, I guess. Hi, Viv.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Yeah, just last year I decided I was going to start growing some gourds. I wanted to make some gourd banjos, and I also do art on them. I happen to be lucky to have had a couple of gourds been given to me that were already dry. I did some things, so I got inspired. Well, they don't seem to dry quickly enough for me. So I had a friend who actually drilled a hole and got some of the pulp out, much like you do with a pumpkin, only not from the stem end, but mm-hmm. from the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if that's a viable way to speed up the drying process so that it's drying from the inside out.
Mm. Well, it is not. And I'll tell you why. I mean, it can be, but it can also ruin your gourds because gourds are very sensitive to bacteria. And so when you cut a hole in it, you're opening it up to bacteria.
Mm.
And so if you do it when the gourd is mature but freshly off the vine especially, it's super sensitive to things. It hasn't quite grown on it into its own yet. A better way to dry them quickly is to do what's called green scraping or dry scraping. So you pick them. We always let them stay on the vine through a frost. That's one important thing because you want to make sure that the vine is totally done giving the gourd whatever it's got. So pick it. This would be in the fall after a frost. Give it a couple of weeks, not too long, but maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And then you can take just a plain butter knife, nothing that's sharp. And you can start at the stem end and very softly start to scrape off the outer skin. Now, if you get to the point where it's white, you've gone too far, where it's actually white pulp, you've gone too far. But you can just gently scrape off this skin. I'm trying to think of what it would be like scraping. I'll think of something and to give as a comparison. But you can just keep scraping it. And what happens, this is a disadvantage or an advantage, depending on what you're doing with the gourd. But what happens is this basically the seal that you're taking off the gourd allows it to start seeping. And so it seeps faster than it would if it had to seep through that skin.
Wow.
So your gourd can it can get kind of wet and moldy fast, quickly. So you kind of keep wiping it down for the next few weeks, and it'll be dry in 2 or 3 weeks, opposed to the 5 months or 6 or 8 months that it normally takes. Okay. But the other thing about that is that when you do green scraping, you remove all the mottling. There's no mold on it. So you end up with a gourd that's very, very creamy colored. It's ideal for people who do light paint, like pencils or wood burning on it, because then you don't have the darkness of the mottling in the way. But then you don't have the darkness of the mottling in the way also to kind of help you with your artwork.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much. What a wonderful program.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling in, Vivian.
Happy growing.
Thank you. Same to you.
Same to you, Vivian. Keith in Fort Edwards, we're on to you now. Hi, Keith.
Oh, very interesting program. 2 years ago, we were in Hawaii, and we went to a artisan. This artisan did a technique, which apparently is kind of from the indigenous Hawaiians.
Mm-hmm.
These are huge gourds, and he has found that he can inject the gourds from the inside out and create these beautiful, beautiful creations. And they almost look like turned pottery, but the designs are just fascinating. Now, the man really was enthusiastic, and he gave my wife and myself these seeds, which are grow these large squash, and he was very, very curious if we could grow that type of squash in Wisconsin. Now, ironically, there happened to be a couple from Wisconsin when we were in his shop. And they bought one of these pieces, and these pieces are quite pricey. But if you ever see this, now, the other thing is that he had an apprentice that is, and I think this man has worked with him for for 2 years. Now, I don't have the email address for him, but I'm sure you could look him up, and he apparently is the only one in the world that is doing this. You know, pulling that dye from the inside out to the exterior and makes these beautiful, beautiful designs.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, I do know that there is a process that was almost extinct or almost died off that came from Hawaii that was done by the indigenous people. And the Hawaii Gourd Society just formed, I'm going to say, about 4 years ago, maybe between 3 and 5 years ago. And they have been just great at recreating some of these artisanal techniques.
Oh.
And so the way that this indigenous technique is such that they take these large gourds, they when they're green, they open the top and they pour coffee in it or tea, something with a tannin, a good tannin. And then while that's in the gourd, and they just leave it in there, on the outside, they carve their design. And it's, what is it called? Reverse art.
Like a negative.
It is negative. Thank you very much. Big word. Yeah, so they have to carve it in the opposite. And then when the gourd has dried and they take the rest of the skin and mold off, they have this beautiful piece. Oh. That's what was under the skin is dark and what was not under the skin is light, which seems the opposite of what you would
expect,
think. But yeah. And it's just it's a beautiful process. Very, very time consuming.
No wonder they would get a premium price.
Yes.
For.
Yeah. And then the other thing is too, in order to do this, they have to cut the gourd or they have to puncture the gourd in some way to insert this, you know, you can do it with inks. But most of the time, traditionally, they had done it with coffee or tea type products. And so they have to puncture the gourd. And so this is one reason why it becomes so expensive, because gourds are so susceptible to bacteria. And so, you know, you might do 3 or 4 of them and lose 2 of them.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
So. But it's a gorgeous technique. Yeah.
Thanks a lot for sharing that, Keith. Appreciate it very much. We have lots of people online. Pam and Mercer joins us next. Pam, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Thanks. Yeah, we have a cabin in Mercer in Iron County and would love to grow or to start growing gourds there. And I'm just wondering what conditions are needed, if kind of a wooded lot would work or how much sun, and then if the deer or bear would eat them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just would they work up there?
Right. Iron County sounds very north to me, is it?
Pardon me?
I said Iron County sounds very north to me, is it?
Okay.
Is it north? Are you?
It is.
Yeah.
It's north, and Iron County is just south of Canada.
Oh, okay. So you're going to have a really short...
UP. I'm sorry. The UP.
Okay. So you're going to have a pretty short growing season. This is going to be the biggest problem, because even the best of gourds is at minimum 90-day, needs a minimum 90-day from the time that it's pollinated, really.
Okay.
So that's a short season. But to answer some of your other questions, deer will sometimes take a bite out of a green gourd, but that's about as far as they go because they're very bitter. And so we don't usually have problems with deer. We don't have bear by us, so I don't yet. So I don't know if bear is going to be a problem. But you asked something else. Growing conditions. Well, wooded lot. They need full sun.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Marge in Madison, on to you. Hi, Marge. Marge, are you there? We lost Marge. Let's go to Ray in Madison. Hi, Ray.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I'm just going to talk about gourds in Africa. Africa, they're used in many ways, and they're called calabashes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure where the origin of calabash comes from. I think it's a Spanish word. But Africans use calabashes for all kinds of things and all the things that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many things about calabashes in Africa that are part of African storytelling. My wife has a store on Monroe Street in Madison, down the west end of Monroe Street, an Africa store, and she has a number of very beautifully decorated African gourds, mostly from Kenya, and they're carved and etched out. And so someone wants to see some African gourds. We also have some musical instruments. There's one musical instrument in which it's a xylophone, and underneath for the sound are gourds hanging from the bottom of the keys.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some very interesting uses. They're beaded gourds and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So if people would like to see a different kind of gourd art that's found in Africa, it's down on Monroe Street.
And the name of your shop, the shop is?
Yeah, the shop has those gourds, yeah.
Yeah, and the name of the shop is?
Calabash Gifts.
Calabash Gifts. Thanks, Ray.
Okay, and just an aside, Sherlock Holmes had a pipe which was made from a calabash.
Yep.
And Jimmy Durante used to end his show. Yeah. Good evening, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
That's good
right.
Night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are. And he never would say who Mrs. Calabash was.
Right.
And we'll never know.
I'll say that Calabash Gifts is down on Monroe Street.
Great.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Raymond.
Thanks.
And have you had experience with the African gourds?
I have, in fact. Ray is correct that the term calabash comes from the Latin languages, and that's what they usually call gourds, calabaza. So here's the thing. Calabash in Africa actually grow in two ways, which we don't get out here. All we know of gourds is always that they grow on a vine. Mm-hmm. But in Africa, there are calabash trees. And the calabash tree, it's just a big tree, but the fruit of the what we would call the gourd or the calabash actually grows right against an arm of the tree, right up against it. And so they slash it off like with a machete.
Mm.
And they use those. They can hollow them out a little bit. They're very, very dense, extremely dense. And they also grow in the subtropics. I have an instrument from Vietnam that uses those. But also, he talked about the xylophone-like instrument. We have two musicians that will be at the festival this weekend, and they will be playing from 11:30 to 1:30. Tani Jakite, he's from Mali. He makes an instrument called the Ngoni, which is sort of like a round-bodied guitar, but you don't play it like a guitar. You actually hold it facing you and play it. He's a very famous Ngoni maker and Ngoni player. And then his partner, Jam Vivi. And Jam, actually, he plays drums, but he's also just an unbelievable woodworker. And Jam, when I met him, it was because he needed some gourds because he was going to teach a children's class on making a balafon, which is this xylophone that uses gourds as a resonator. And he was teaching it at, Folklore Village.
Folklore Village.
Towards Dodgeville. So he came to our farm to get gourds to use for this children's class. And so we had a lot of discussion around how we were going to pay for these. And so we made a deal. You come back and teach me how to make a balafon, and you can take the gourds. And so he did. A few months later, he came back, and he had all the wood for the keys cut correctly. And he did this beautiful artwork carving on the four posts for each corner. And then he showed me how to make a balafon. And so together we made a balafon. So I have one of those. Ray also mentioned these beaded gourds. Those are known as shakerays. And we find those all over the place as a musical instrument. We use them. They're used in South America and, of course, in Africa.
No. You have a website.
I do. It's thegourdgirl.com. Mm-hmm. But on my husband's side, it's wisconsingourds.com. It both goes to the same place, so whatever's easier to remember.
And I think Judith posted that up. Yes, she did post that on our Facebook page, too. Mm. So if you forget that, what was that website? All you have to do is go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And by the way, on the Facebook page, we got a note back that Chuck sent, and we were talking about that beautiful, what they call a monkey pole. That's what the artist named it. And Chuck's father carved that.
Oh.
And he passed it along to Chuck before he passed away last year. And Chuck is starting to take up the craft himself. Well, Chuck's father was a mighty fine artist.
Yes, he was indeed. And if Chuck is interested in sharing his his artistry, he should join the Wisconsin Gourd Society.
Yeah, tell us about the Wisconsin Gourd Society before we go back to the phones.
Okay, Wisconsin Gourd Society was founded in 2005, and it is a collection of artists and growers. We have, it ranges between about 150 and 200 members. We have, during the summer, classes at least every month and sometimes more than once a month, and we try to get them throughout the state. We have a quarterly newsletter that comes out that has a member highlight. It might specialize on one type of technique and have photos. We'll have tips and techniques articles and then, of course, list of classes and any information that we can gather over the course of time. And then we have our festival every year in the spring at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, and we have a membership gourd gathering on our farm every year in the fall. And so it's just a great collection of people. We're there to share information. We have little gourd patches, which are groups of people in given areas. Like we have a Dane County gourd patch or southwestern Wisconsin gourd patch, and patches like in Milwaukee. And, you know, and the idea of the patch is just so that these people can get together whenever they want, maybe once a month on a Wednesday night or something. And sometimes they'll bring what they're working on. Sometimes they'll have a special theme for the evening, or they might have how to use particular tools or paints or whatever. And yeah.
And you also have some nice shirts. You brought me a shirt.
Oh, I did. You like that? Isn't that
nice? I like it.
It's great.
Wisconsin Gourd Society. Well, we have callers online. By the way, we have an open line or two, so you can get on at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, and you can also post something on our Facebook page as well if you'd like, at The Larry Mueller Show. Josh had a Facebook question for you. Are there any gourds that grow as vines that would climb a fence?
Well, there's not a gourd that wouldn't.
Yeah.
It's easier to say it that way. If you want something beautiful, but you don't care about the gourd itself, you just want something beautiful on the fence, then grow luffas. This luffa is just absolutely the most gorgeous plant. It has a yellow flower. It comes in clusters of like six yellow flowers and then one yellow flower nearby. So I'm not sure which is the male and the female. I've never quite been able to figure that part out with the luffas. They're kind of an enigma for me. But the leaves are just beautiful, and they're a dark green with a silver tinge to them, and then these great green veins that run through them, and they'll climb like mad. But you're not really going to get too many luffas because it's a 140-day plant, so it's kind of hard to get them. But if you want something that's just pretty, that's great. Otherwise, every gourd vines, and they all have tendrils. So they'll climb fences, they'll climb garages, they'll climb buildings. They'll cover your children if you're not careful.
Okay. Doug in Minocqua has a question or comment. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi.
I build gourd banjo. Well, I build a variety of banjos. I've been playing around with gourd banjos, and I've been very unsuccessful in finding the fruit that's got thick enough walls and big enough diameters. I need something 10 to 14 inches in diameter with about a good thick wall.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if we had any suggestions on seed stock and what kind of growing times frames I'm looking at.
Right. So are you talking about growing your own, or are you looking for a place to get the gourd?
Either, I preferably grow my own.
Okay.
I had a guy down in Mississippi growing them for me, but he had to get out of the business.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, if you're going to grow your own, then what you want is a bushel gourd. That's going to be the type. I personally like the seeds that come from Quarry Farms, which is you can get them online. Anna Miller owns Quarry Farms, and she's a great seed grower, and she guarantees pure seed. She has a really high germination level. They're just wonderful seeds. And she's,
is that Quarry with a C or a K?
Quarry, Q-U-A-R-R-Y.
Oh, Quarry. Okay.
Quarry, right. And I think she's out of Ohio, so they're grown near enough to our area that, you know, that it's a similar growing situation. Now, for a bushel gourd, you're going to need 120 days, full sun. You could direct seed it if you're in the southern part of the state. Where are you?
Oh, Managua.
Yeah. The problem with starting them early is that they really hate to be transplanted. They absolutely hate it. So they go dormant for a few weeks when you transplant them. So you're losing 2 out of the 4 weeks, you know, if you grow them for 6 weeks before you put them in. And plus, my husband says he does not see any difference. In fact, they tend to get a little bit leggy if you wait too long. And, you know, they like the soil to be about 65, 70 degrees when you put the seeds in. So, but if you're looking for a place to buy them, I would say check with us first because we're going to be most local to you early in the season. By end of May, by end of June for sure, we're usually out of our good stuff already because people know to come early in the season. They have to give us enough time to get them cleaned, but then they sell very quickly. So, and we have pretty good luck with nice bodied gourds for musical instruments. So they work well. If you're not happy or you can't find what you want with us, locally, I don't know anyone else in Wisconsin that is a gourd grower that would have something, I think, the quality that we have. We just happen to be lucky with where we are. We're in the southern part of the state, and we're high. We're on a hill, so we really are lucky. But if you want to do it online, I would recommend Wurtz Farm in Arizona. It's W-U-E-R-T-Z.
Okay. Yeah. I appreciate thank you.
Sure. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We're talking about those glorious gourds today with Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, and we call her the Gourd Girl. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You don't need a lot of fancy equipment to make your own corn muffin mix or cream cheese with New York Times reporter Julia Moskin's DIY starter kit for your kitchen. I'm Laurie Skelton, in for Gene Faraca, making my own pantry staples today at 3, here on Earth, Radio Without Borders.
Support for WPR comes from Williamson Bicycle Works, offering options to all Madison bicycle participants for family, sport, recreational, or transportation use. Remember, if you're not on Washington Avenue, you're not at Willie Bikes. Learn more at williebikes.com.
So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network as we talk gourds with Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. Go to her website. We have it posted up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. But what is it again? I'm sorry.
It's www.thegourdgirl.com. Mm-hmm. Or www.wisconsingourds.
And I know you have lots of photos, pictures of your own, of your work and mm-hmm. and. That's kind of one of the fun parts about going to your site.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we do have a gallery. We have a gallery that's not just my stuff, but on my husband's side of the site. It's really one site. On his side of the site, there's some great photos of the manipulation that he's done with gourds. He ties knots in gourds, and he intertwines them so that you can't get them apart when they're mature. And then on my side of the site is the gallery. And this year, I'm also going to put up another an addition to the site, which is class photos, because I teach so many classes, and it's great just to see some of the people, how they are doing their work, and you can have a class on one subject, and yet 10, you know, everything, they'll have 10 students and 10 very, very different things. So
And I'm looking at your schedule of events and classes. How do you keep up? I mean, you've got a lot going on right through the year.
I haven't updated that. That's I actually am scheduled out now until March 5th of 2012. Yeah. Yeah. I think since I printed that, I think I've added over a dozen things.
And you have exhibits, you have lectures, mm-hmm. You have carving.
Yeah.
Classes.
Yeah. I do want to talk about exhibits for a second. First of all, Overture Center they are so great to work with. They have an application for exhibits for artists out there. This is not something to be missed, really. The application deadline is over now for 2012, but for the following year, I think the application will come out like in the fall or something. But it's open to individual artists or groups of artists. And if you're an individual, they might bulk you in with other artists,
sure.
of, you know, like kind of things. But we had an exhibit up there for the last 3 months in the third gallery, the third floor gallery. I think we had maybe this time 8 or 10 artists. And we did this exhibit again 2 years ago. And this year we did something different, which it was so nice to do, was to give something to the community in reference to our gourds. So we scheduled classes with kids so that they could make shakers. This was a free mm-hmm. class for the kids. And they scheduled it around the kids in the rotunda events
oh.
so that the kids could go to the rotunda event and then come and make little gourd shakers. And I got to tell you, in today's day and age, when kids are just so iPod and electronic and computerized and everything has to do something, what does it do? What does it do? These kids sat down and, I mean, I had parents come up and say, I never had any idea that this could be so much fun. And the kids loved it. They had a blast, you know. So it was really a nice thing that I think for artists who get into this gallery, it's important to think about that, giving mm-hmm. that, giving something back, because the Overture gave us a lot by allowing us to have that exhibit. And plus, they're so darn nice to work with. They're really great to work with. So, yeah, so we had that exhibit, just came down, and this coming Monday, we have another exhibit going up in Cincinnati Mound at the Cincinnati Mound Center. If you've never been to Cincinnati Mounds, very southwest end of the state, it's an incredible place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about that one day on the show.
Yeah.
Marge in Madison has a comment or question. Hi, Marge.
I'm here. First, I want to sing the praises of this woman, Terry Schmidt. I was a gourd person just wandering around out there by myself thinking there weren't too many people doing gourds. And she came along and she and her husband founded this society. And I think you can tell from all the things she's told you how enthused she is and how well-informed and how smart she is about so many things. So anyway, thank you, Terry.
Oh, Marge, you silly lady.
And I have a question about fertilizer. I've been growing gourds in the same place for a number of years, and I do use some horse manure, but I wonder if there's some other kind of fertilizer that would really help these gourds along.
Well, you know, Larry, every year, not Larry Mueller, mm-hmm. The gourd guy, every year he tries to come up with what's the best way to do it. He wants to make them better. And so every year it's a different thing. We really don't know. They like a slightly acid soil. I can tell you that. I really can't tell you. I would say, Marge, I know where you're growing and you need to rotate. You know, you can't grow in the same place all the time because they just suck the bejabbers out of the soil.
Yeah.
So you need to rotate or at least, you know, give your place a rest for a year. But
yeah,
that's the best I can tell you for fertilizers. I mean, 10-10-10 is, you know, we would use 10-10-10 and that probably was about the best. I think last year someone in one of the garden shops told him he did something like 30, 27, 27 or something. I don't know. He didn't really notice any difference in that. So
okay. Great. Yeah. Thank you, Terry.
Hey, Marge. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much for calling.
Can I say something?
Sure.
The Gourd Society exists because of Marge. That really is why. She used to come up to the stand. She was a longtime customer of Larry's, and not really a buying customer, but a talking customer.
Yeah.
And when we got married, I met her, and she was the one who said, why don't we have a Gourd Society in Wisconsin? Because there's a national society. Mm-hmm. We're under that umbrella. And it's because of her that this Gourd Society got started. So it's all her fault.
Thank you, Marge, for calling. David and Shano up next. David, hello.
Hello. What's coming through?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Okay, this is just your question when you were talking about Jimmy Durante and Mrs. Calabash. And the fact that really she did exist. It was a woman, and she was a waitress. And when Jimmy Durante was kind of down and out, trying to make it as an entertainer, he stopped in at that restaurant, and she sat down with him and encouraged him to keep on going. And when he left the restaurant, he said, asked her her name, and she said, my name's Mrs. Calabash. And he said, Mrs. Calabash, if I make it, I'll remember you every day.
Oh, my God.
And now you know the rest of the story.
Oh, my gosh. I have goosebumps over that.
That's a wonderful story. David, thank you so much. But I thought he had never told that, the reason why he said, good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
Yeah, that was Paul Harvey had that as the rest of the story.
Oh.
And that's where that's from.
Well, you have to believe Paul Harvey.
You betcha.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Well, it's a wonderful story.
That's great.
And probably true.
Probably. Paul Harvey said it.
Ann in Manitowoc, we are on to you. Hi, Ann.
Hello. I have just a quick question. Are there any types of gourds that are less tasty to deer, and especially the foliage, because I have a lot of deer?
Boy, and do you have a lot of problems with deer eating your gourds?
No, I've never grown gourds. I'm always looking for things that...
Yeah.
Well, you're on to something here.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have a problem with it. We have deer, and we will, on occasion, have a deer bite. I mean, out of maybe, 5 to 10,000 gourds that we can harvest in a year, if we see 2 deer bites, I think that would be a lot. They're just so bitter, they don't like them.
And that would be the same for the foliage?
It's
bitter?
Yeah, well, the foliage is very prickly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's not, it's not a good thing for them.
But it's pretty.
It's pretty, yeah. I mean, we get them walking through.
Mm-hmm.
We can see the footprints, and sometimes the where they've maybe walked up a plant. But we don't have problems with them eating anything.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
Ann.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Stella in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I was calling in reference to the discussion earlier about the long growing season for gourds, and that they really do not like to have their roots disturbed by transplanting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What my husband does is he starts our garden plants in our greenhouse, and he makes paper pots out of newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts the seeds in the pots, and you can make different sized ones. You can make one that's big enough to get your gourd to the whatever size you need it. And then when it comes time to plant things, and particularly things that don't like to have their roots disturbed in the garden, we just dig a hole and plop the whole thing in.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great idea.
And the newspaper serves as compost. The roots grow right through it. And they never have to be disturbed, so that might solve the transplant shock.
Right.
Does he wet the? What does he do with the newspaper itself? Does he just put it in a pot?
He has. Well, he bought a mold.
Mm.
It's like a wooden pestle.
Okay.
You cut strips. This is for the small pots that are about maybe 2-3 inches in diameter.
Yeah.
You cut strips of newspaper into about 4-inch wide strips, and then you wrap the newspaper around the pestle, and then there's a base that has a, it's a round base a little bit larger than the diameter of the pestle, and at the diameter of the pestle, there's a groove just inside the outside the perimeter, and you press the pestle down on it, and that groove folds the paper.
Yeah,
folds
I can
the
see
paper
that.
Up. But he has used, you know, he's very inventive, and he's used when he needs a larger pot, he just uses something larger as a pestle and figures out a way to mash it down in, on a base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those newspaper pots are terrific, actually. What I would warn against is peat pots. The newspaper, yeah, the newspaper pots do seem to kind of fall apart quickly enough once they're in the soil.
Yeah, and peat pots tend to dry out.
Right.
And they get real stiff when they're dry.
Right.
And newspaper pots don't.
Right, and the problem is with the peat pots is that when they dry, they shrink and they constrict the roots.
Yeah.
And the gourd roots will grow right through those peat pots. But then if the pot has dried out, so if you plant the pot into the earth and then it gets dry, you know, it just it doesn't do the gourds any good. Whereas when you're using a newspaper pot, that newspaper falls apart pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
So,
yeah. Once it gets wet.
And it helps build the soil.
Yep. Yeah. They're very good. They really are very good. And those little peat pot makers are terrific. They work really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
We did that
as a project with kids at a sustainability fair. A local free paper donated a bunch of papers, and they made pots and planted seeds and took them home.
Oh,
and really enjoyed it.
Great.
Thank you so much, Stella.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate your call very much. Glorious gourds, our topic today, and our guest, Terry Schmidt. Terry is the founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. We call her the Gourd Girl. The 5th Annual Gourd Festival, Gourdy Two Shoes at Old Brick Botanical Gardens, Saturday in Madison from 9 to 4. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking glorious gourds today here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society and the Gourd Girl. We're great to have her along, and thank you for listening in. If you have questions about growing gourds or what to do with those gourds, things that you can make from gourds, experiences to share, call us at 1-800-642-1234. And let's turn to Dot, who's been waiting a while for Manitowoc. Dot, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good afternoon, Terry and Larry.
Hi.
This is what I'm going to do this year. I'm going to warm the soil by putting a tomato cage around the site that I select, and then I'm going to wrap plastic around that tomato cage so that I can warm the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get an extra benefit of the seeds to germinate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That works. That works.
That's, I don't know exactly how many weeks I will gain, but that's what I'm going to do this year because
mm-hmm.
I've grown gourds in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would like to know, what do you do to finish your gourd? What wax do you put on or the paint or any of the cover to protect the gourds throughout their life?
Okay.
When they're finished.
Right, once they're dried and you've done artwork. Well, first of all, in terms of artwork, you can use anything on it for color. You can use stains. You can use dyes like leather dyes, although leather dyes are notorious for fading, so most of us stay away from those now. But acrylics or oils or chalks or pencils or you name it, anything that has color in it, you can use. It can be water-based. It can be oil-based. It doesn't matter. Once you've put your artwork on it, there are a number of ways that you can finish it. You can either spray it. If it's going to be indoors, you can spray it with like a Krylon, just a plain clear acrylic spray. You can use these triple thick gloss things so they look like they're really,
mm-hmm.
really glossed. You can use two-part epoxy, which will make it a very, very hard finish. You can use beeswax or a protecting wax. If your artwork is going to be outside, first of all, I don't recommend putting your artwork outside because gourds are porous, and even if you've got them sealed, in our humid weather, they will absorb the humidity from the air. But if you're going to put it outside, let's say you make a birdhouse and you have some work on it, I say finish it off with beeswax. The best thing for a birdhouse is to do wood burning and then put beeswax over it. Mm. The burning's not going to come off of the gourd. The beeswax is going to protect it. You could also use like a brown boot polish, shoe polish kind of rub. And the nice thing about that is if it gets discolored from the rain, you just put another coat on it. Whereas if you've used paint, it starts to peel off and it gets all funky. So,
there you go. Thank you very much for calling. You're talking about the beautiful things that can be made with gourds, and a lot of those things are going to be on exhibit at the 5th Annual Gourd Festival. And we haven't really talked about that festival, so before we go back to the phones, let's go into some detail on that. What are people going to see when they arrive at Olbrich Botanical Gardens on Atwood Avenue in Madison tomorrow between 9 and 4?
Right. Okay. The first thing they will see is our membership table. Our membership table is pretty big now, and it will have, obviously, membership information, so you can join the society. But also they'll sell Wisconsin Gourd Society T-shirts, our regular T-shirts, but they also have T-shirts that are made up just for this festival. The theme of this festival is Gourdy Two Shoes, so there's a little Gourdy Two Shoes guy on the front. And they also sell how-to books, simple how-to books, a variety of how-to books. They will have all of the stuff that's been donated for our raffle, and that will be usually gourd tools, finishing products, things that are used to make the gourd art. I don't know what else is at the membership table. But then if you go into the atrium, there will be a gourd grower, Jack Schandelmeyer, who's from Illinois. This is Jack's last year. He's retiring. So he's going to have some great, great prices on gourd seed. He's a seed grower.
Okay.
So his regular packages of seed that are a dollar are going to be 50 cents this year. And his bulk seeds, I don't know what he usually sells them for, but he's selling bulk seeds for $5. So it's a steal. Now, Jack's gourds are not, he doesn't do pure gourd. He doesn't cover the flower after it's been pollinated, but he has a pretty good germination rate. And his gourds are, he can get some pretty good sized gourds. So Jack will be in there. Royal Wood Limited will be in the atrium as well. And they have weaving materials and tools and the like. They're out of Ohio. And then there will be also a class and a demo held in the atrium. In the commons, we have a great kids activity area. Kids can plant a gourd seed and take that home and try to grow it. And we are using peat pots, even though I don't really like the peat pot idea. But at least they can get the gourd grown in there and then maybe, you know, take it out of the pot before they transplant it. But there's also a pin the, I don't know what it is, if it's a pin the hat on Gourdy Two Shoes or pin the shoe on Gourdy Two Shoes, or there's a game there. There's a lot of informational stuff for kids on gourds and coloring and stuff like that in the kids' corner. It's really nice. And then the artist that we have in the commons, Gary Qualheim, is a very, very good carver, an unbelievable carver. When you see Gary's stuff, you'll just be amazed. Chuck Evans is also just a great artist, and he just joined us, or just said that he's going to come tomorrow, so he'll be there. A couple of ladies, Ramona and Diane from Dodgeville, they'll be there. They sell very nice woven gourds. Jill and Wes Nelson from Chicago area, I believe they're from Chicago area, they're going to come up. They also teach classes at the Botanical Gardens in Chicago. And then our president, Barb Rothwell, she'll have a booth. Edie Ritter from Boscobel.
Edie
will be there selling gourds.
I thought she might call today.
I thought so too. She knows I'm on. We have a couple from Arizona that came out, Miriam and Bud Sagan. And Miriam is teaching. She has a new technique using melted crayons on gourds. It sounds wacky, but it's just beautiful. And so she's going to have a booth there. June Kilgren from Milwaukee and Sharon Donahue from Sun Prairie. We have a silent auction in there, and this is all artwork in the silent auction. And then my husband will have raw gourds, and I'll have a booth with product. And so that's everything that you're going to see there pretty much. In the lobby also, we have music in the morning. Our music is a group called the Gray Cats, and they do bluegrass music. From 11:30 to 1:30, we have John Vivi and Tani Jakite, and they do African music. Very, very nice sounds. And then from 2 until 4, we'll have the Multi Jam group, which I'm a member of, but I won't be playing. And they play old time and bluegrass music. So we have stuff going on everywhere you look. Everywhere you look.
And any cost to get in?
Nope. It's free to the public, free parking. I think Olbrich charges if you want to go into the conservatory area.
But
I think
it's
like a dollar. So, but yeah, but no, everything there is free. So
it will be a great time.
It will be a great time. Just also to let people know that we do not have food there. Then that's kind of a stipulation of Olbrich. So, you know, so if you're going to plan on spending the day, then you want to, you know, you want to make sure that you bring something, brown bag it or whatever. We also will have classes throughout the day. And I'll just quickly run by those. In the morning, we have this wax designing on gourds, which is done by Miriam from Arizona. We had a gourd class scheduled, and so some people might still see that on the site. But the instructor called this morning. Her husband was in a car accident last night.
Oh, no.
So she's going to cancel on that class, and we're going to try to place those students in other classes. Also in the morning, we have a class called Embroidery on Gourds by Bonnie Cox, who's from the from Illinois. So that's a new process. None of us have seen that. There's a birdhouse class in the midday, 11:30 to 2:30. Then Miriam is doing the wax technique as a demo at 3 o'clock, and that's free. And then a chip carving class with Jerry Prater from Illinois. And Jerry's a great chip carver and he's a great instructor. And then I'm teaching a basketry weaving class in the afternoon also.
Lots going on. And that's tomorrow.
That is tomorrow. Registration for classes is closed right now, but they will open it again tomorrow morning.
Okay.
So they just closed the last couple of days before the festival so that Olbrich does this so that they can, I guess, get the classes all figured out. Yeah.
Josie in Sheboygan, we are on to you now. Hi, Josie.
Hi. I was just wondering, I live in Sheboygan, and I'm wondering if there's any classes or people that might be growing gourds that you can buy, because I rent, and it's kind of hard to grow them, but I do art, and I've always been interested. I always love gourds. I don't know why, but... And then I saw, what kind are they that the ones that grow in such... real different shapes, you know. Like I saw one in a magazine where a guy was wearing it like a hat, and it looked just like a cat.
Uh-huh.
And long. It's just amazing. I just love them, you know.
Yeah. Well, everybody loves gourds. So you said, I really love them, but I don't know why. It's just because they're gourds. So you can't not love a gourd. It's sort of un-American not to love gourds. For resources in your area, I believe that for growers, I don't think there are any gourd growers out there, unless there might be a hobbyist grower someplace in the area. And your best place to check for that would be through a local farmer's market. Sometimes the farmers market people will be able to direct you to someone. A lot of the hobby growers don't do farmers markets because, frankly, you can sit at a market all day and sell $5 in gourds because, number one, they're not that expensive, and you know, it's not like people are, you know, beating down our door for them. So, so the farmers market would probably be the best place. Now, in terms of classes, if you want a class in your area and you can get five people together to take a class, we will teach a class. We'll go anywhere to teach. And anything that you see on my website for sure, you know, can be taught. Or if you see something that's not on my site that you're interested in, you can email me and I'll find someone who teaches it. I usually try to find someone in your area, but if not, I love day trips. And so I'll come out and teach.
I don't have a computer, so what is there any phone number that...
Do you have a library nearby?
Oh, yes. Sure. I know that. Oh, that's right. You can use their.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Go to the library and just go to thegourdgirl.com. And
gourdgirl.com.
Right.
Okay.
The Gourd Girl. Right, yeah. And look in the gallery and you'll see photos of things and if there's something you're interested in. The only thing is that we have to have enough people in the area to justify the trip, you know.
Sure.
So we need 5 people in the area to justify the trip. And so if you can get people together to do it, or if you let me know that you want a particular class, I can canvass the members that we have in the Gourd Society and see if they would like to take the class too. And then we'd be happy to...
What do you have to do to join the Gourd Society? Do you have to be out of your gourd?
That's part of the requirement, but we can drive you there. So we can take you to that point, so it's not important. I can, well, you don't have a computer. I can send you a Gourd Society application if there's a way to get your information.
Sure, well, we can put you on hold, Josie, and Judith can get that information.
Yeah, and I can send you an application.
Okay.
And, yeah.
And we'll put you on hold.
All righty.
Thanks.
Hold on. There you go. And Terry and Madison, back to you. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I noticed that my neighbor across the street had a really nice display of gourds, but they were raw gourds, and they've been there since maybe October. And the other day, either a squirrel or a raccoon just tore into them and ate them.
Mm-hmm.
So there are pieces all over. They didn't eat all of the shells, but they ate a lot of them. I thought you said that gourds aren't a food source.
Well, when they're in the garden and they're green, typically they're not. But at this time of year, most of the gourds are dried or nearly dried, and the seeds are nice, tender morsels.
So
they will tear them apart to get the seeds, especially squirrels, mice, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
I'll
so you need to get them out. Yeah, you need to get them out of there then.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't want them just laying down on the ground where you might have a lot of squirrels or mice. Yeah. Even with birdhouses, a lot of times, because when we do birdhouses, we don't clean them out because the birds will like some of the fiber and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we'll get squirrels in the birdhouses. And if your hole's not big enough, a woodpecker will just make it as big as they want it to be.
Sure.
So.
There you go. Thank you, Terry. Why don't you tell us more about your own operation? Larry, you and Larry have quite an operation growing. You grow more gourds than anybody else in the state, I'm pretty sure.
I think we do. Yeah, I think we do. It sure seems like we do. We grow a lot. We have a lot of gourds. Well, we live on a farm in Blue Mounds. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect place because we're high up in the air. Our property is kind of high on a hilltop. And so we have mostly non-tillable land, a lot of forest land, but maybe 12 acres of tillable property. And he might grow, depending on the year, between 1 and 3 acres, which is a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. With Lagenaria hard gourds, an acre will usually give you about 5,000 to 8,000 gourds. If you're doing miniature gourds, you're talking an acre is about 20,000 gourds. So we can get a lot of gourds out of, you know, out of 2 or 3 acres. I'm going to guess that he does maybe 2, 2.5 acres worth. And then he rotates his crop every 4 years. So he only goes back every fourth year. And we have to do that mostly because the pests that are prevalent are the squash bugs and the cucumber beetles. Mm-hmm. And the cucumber beetles, those guys, there are two types. There's one that comes from the south and they migrate up and there's nothing we can do about those. But the other ones that lived here, the spotted ones come up and the striped ones live here or vice versa. But they... the ones that live here will overwinter in the grass around the field.
Okay.
And so it's really good to move the field pretty far away so that, you know, when spring comes, they're going to have to look for them.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to put them right in their laps, so to speak. So so that is kind of an issue. But, you know, Larry will be out there planting. He plants early. He'll be planting in 3 weeks. I'm sure he'll be planting in 3 weeks. Yeah. And he'll direct seed and then he will put, this sounds really wacky, but he puts milk cartons mm-hmm. over the seeds to kind of warm up the soil. This other lady that yeah. called in talked about warming up. This is how he does it. And he'll keep those milk cartons down there until they're actually up and big enough to come out of the cartons. And so it's kind of a funny looking field when it first starts out. But then he takes it out and takes those out. And as long as he can get into the field, those fields are spotless. There's not a weed to be found. He just babies them. He really takes care of it. And then once the plants get so big he can't get through, they're on their own, and they pretty much will crawl over any weed. The weeds really don't have too
a
much
chance.
Not much of a chance, right? He also puts up trellises because he grows about 20 varieties of gourds. And so he will have snake gourds and long-handled dippers, which he'll trellis. And the loofahs have to be trellised. Those have to be trellised. The snakes and long-handled dippers, when he trellises those, it's just to try and keep them as straight as he possibly can. Or it makes it a little bit easier for him to tie knots, which is an amazing feat in itself. I don't know how he does it. So he'll have trellises throughout. A couple years ago, he made beautiful two archways out of hog wire and hog fencing, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And he bent it, and they were maybe 8 feet high. And they grew over with the gourd vines, and then the gourds, he had long-handled dippers, and they were coming down through the arbor. It was just gorgeous. And then they were so heavy that it actually pulled the hog fencing down. Now, I mean, that's pretty tough, you know. So anyway, he'll go through the season, and he barely will water, maybe early on if we really, really have a dry spell. But he pretty much leaves it up to nature. I saw that someone had a question
about
watering.
Yeah.
And I want to address that because this is what gourds like: heat, sun, and water. When they're when they start out, that's really what they need. And you want to give them all of that as much as they need all the way through the season until about September. And then come September, no more water. We don't want water because now's when we want them to start drying out. If they have too much water in them early October when we start to get that freeze, that water's got to go somewhere, and it expands and it'll pop the gourd. It'll actually crack the gourd. So we try, you know, we pray for water all summer and lots of heat and humidity, and then in September we're backtracking and saying we didn't need it. We don't want anymore. So yeah, and then in the fall, he leaves them on the vine until after a good frost. And then when he harvests them, he'll put them on pallets and still leave them outside because it's easier to clean them if they've gone through the winter. And so, yeah, we might have a little bit of mouse damage from time to time, but it's really not – when you're growing this many gourds, that's way too much food for a mouse. So.
Well, Deb in Milwaukee has a question for you. Deb, hi.
Hi. You piqued my interest when I heard you mention the crayon lady, and I melt crayons, but I've tried them on many different mediums, but not gourds, and so I'm interested in knowing who she is and if she's her gourds are on display on any website, and then also if I take a loofah sponge that has been purchased like at a retail store, can I shake those seeds out and plant those?
Okay. I'll answer your last question first. The loofahs that you get, like at you're talking about maybe at a Bath and Body Shop? Okay. Those were likely came from China or the subtropics. And they're very thick loofahs, and they're really nice. They've been treated. They've been bleached or treated in some way. There's no telling where those loofahs have been or how old they are. So, I mean, because loofahs will last forever. And so it wouldn't hurt to try germinating one, but I wouldn't guarantee it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you have a loofah, let's say you buy a loofah from me and there's a seed in it. First of all, I don't treat my loofah, so they just dry. The seeds, the loofahs, we keep them out in the barn so it's cold, but I have germinated them. So... Mm-hmm. You know,
it
I think
work.
That they could work. Your best bet, though, it's just not expensive. Go to Jung's or go to a garden shop and you can get your seeds there.
And the person, is there a website for the person who?
Yes. It's Miriam Joy, M-I-R-I-A-M, Joy, J-O-Y, Creations.
Yeah.
And she has her own website, and she will be at the festival if you can make it down. She's teaching, and she's doing a demo.
And that festival is the 5th Annual Gourd Festival, Gourdy Two Shoes, tomorrow at Old Brick Gardens in Madison from 9 to 4. And again, go to your website, and they'll find out more about that event. And thank you so much. Terry, it's been a pleasure.
Hey.
We'll do it again.
Okay. See you next year.
Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, our guest today. Thanks to her, and thank you for listening here on the Ideas Network.